Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob, and happy Canada Day and Independence Day.
Right. We've got both big days ahead of us, and I kind of like to reflect on it. I've got out on my deck on the glass on the patio, I've got the American flag, and I've got the Canadian flag, modest size.
Well, genetically, I'm a quarter American.
Oh, okay.
So, a grandmother whose ancestors landed in New Orleans back in the 1600s.
Oh, for gosh sake.
So, I think, 400 or so years worth would make you American?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And, of course, the British side.
Of course.
Yeah. Now, we have several listener questions today.
Uh-huh.
Our first one comes from our friend Frank. And Frank asks, well, he says, first of all, it's not just one question, it's a couple of questions. So the first one is, Bob, I've heard you say on many occasions that interest rates go up in a boom, down in a bust. If that is what you meant, I'm confused.
Oh, I'll straighten it up right now because I always mention short-dated interest rates, like tree bills. And going way back, you had the call money in the brokerage business. And the theme continues with that T-bill rates go up at a boom, and the Fed follows by raising its rate. And then when interest rates roll over, like the 3 months or the 6 months, that begins to signal that the boom is over. And I'm watching the 3 month bill right now with that in mind. So until it rolls, you really can't say for certain. So, yeah, and this has been forever. I mean, it even shows up in Roman documents that short rates go up in a boom and they go down in the bust. Now, where this really gets the street is when I've got one from September 2007. That fabulous bull market peaked in the middle of October. And this was the chief investment officer at Harris Trust, and he said it's absolutely certain that the Fed will cut rates and that'll keep the boom going. And we've got a chart here, T-bill rates against the stock market. And the fastest plunges in the stock market have occurred with the fastest plunges in the T-bill rate. So that's one thing that Frank should dwell on, that I'm talking about T-bills.
Our second question from Frank. Do you agree in general that interest rates have been artificially kept low far too long, and that higher interest rates would be a better way to protect the value of savers' money, encourage non-speculative investment, and prevent bubbles everywhere? Is this the fault of central banks and or governments? I've heard you say that the Fed really has to follow what the bond markets do, even though they think they lead them. So which tail is wagging the dog?
Hey, that's really good. You got it right. The intervention of central bankers have got this theory that if they provide extra credit or extra currency, it'll prevent bad things from happening. And so they do that, but that keeps adding more and more fuel to the system. So when the street decides it's going to get very speculative, and it's the street's call, not the Fed's call, boom, everything goes up. until it gets overdone, and then all goes down. So this notion of intervention in the credit markets by a central bank really is nonsensical. And it goes way back to before the Fed was formed. The movers and shakers of the day knew that when you had a financial crisis in the credit markets, that a recession would follow. So they boast, and the system still boasts, that with the Fed there as lender of last resort, it would prevent the credit crisis, and presto, no more recessions. Now, in any sort of objective scrutiny, it only takes one failure to trash the theory, and there's been 18 cyclical recessions since the Fed started practicing its magic in 1914. So it's all nonsense, but your questions are quite to the point.
Yes, if the Federal Reserve actually worked in the way it was intended, there wouldn't have been depressions and recessions. Okay, our next question comes from Justin in Berkeley. Ages ago, I did a paper on complex interdependence, which is the theory that creating a mesh of interlocking trading relationships would prevent conflict, and people around the world would get the best prices for goods and peaceful relationships. Well, it almost seems like we had that opportunity in the 90s and early 2000s. I am not exactly understanding the economic or political motivation for deglobalizing the economy and breaking trade relationships and picking food fights with nuclear powers such as China and Russia. Now we have high CPI inflation, busted supply chains, and constant conflicts. Is this some desired effect of global warming alarmism? I don't get it.
Well, the global warming alarmism is just it's been a device to try and control people. Put in regulations and increase taxes. You know, if you give money to the government, they can change the weather. You know, it's really wonderful. And actually, it goes back the medieval warm period was warmer for longer and not than recent. And then it cooled off. The weather got very nasty, and they suffered in Europe. You know, a lot of rain, a lot of cold, poor crops, famines, the whole thing. And even the grass was so poor that livestock died. So anyways, there had to be a scapegoat. And at that time, it was witches that caused the bad weather. And learned magistrates in any of the cities then put witches on trial for providing bad weather, and went through the due legal process and had them executed.
Burned
to death. Thousands of them.
Burned to death.
Yeah, thousands of them in the 1500s. And then now, of course, the scapegoating and laying the blame for weather is much more democratic. It's all women, all men, and all infants. So, it's been a promotion, and I'm going to look up your complex interdimension theory because I can't comment on it until I read about it.
Yes, but it's true. We seem to be a whole lot more peaceful back then, and trade was the big thing. And now, our good friend of the show, Eric Haddock, explains the cycles. And there's an 80-year conflict cycle. This goes back centuries and centuries as well. And my theory is, after 80 years, all the people who were involved in the last big messy war have died off. And the younger generations don't understand how painful and how messy and destructive war really is until it really happens.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's why they're all, let's bomb, let's kill. Mm-hmm. But in the long run, look, Japan and Germany, who were responsible for the world's worst conflict ever, now are our trading partners and friends.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, our third question comes from our great friend Kathleen. And I haven't looked at the question yet, but I suspect a musical reference will be made.
Yep.
And we open up the question from Kathleen. Hello, Bob and Jim. Here's an interesting headline from MarketWatch. Fed's Powell says the risks of overdoing and underdoing rate hikes aren't in balance yet. It reminds me of cooking an apple pie in the oven. I wonder if Fed Powell is singing to these Don McLean lyrics. I knew it. So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye. Bob, Jim, do those lyrics sum up the U.S. economy? Bob, is Fed Powell capable of measuring the temperature of the economy this time around and getting it just right? We don't want a burnt crust, do we? Nor do we want raw apples. Right. I guess it'll get too hot in Powell's kitchen. Will it get too hot in Powell's kitchen for the equity markets?
Oh, yeah. It's the same old. You move into speculative financial markets, and that pushes up real estate, and it pushes up commodities, and then it rolls over. It reaches excesses and rolls over. But one of the things that is fascinating on the bigger picture, and I've done the studies back to ancient Roman times, and it was the 3rd century that did in Rome, and they had wars against other countries, and the government had war against its people. They confiscated all the money, taxation to the moon, and then they did hyperinflation. And what happens is once the hyperinflation drives up things with prices like real estate, and they did have something like the equivalent of equities back in Roman times. And of course, the big market was mortgages. So at any rate, the inflation drives speculative theories. Then it crashes, and then the contraction comes in, and then you begin to get a reformation. And that was the same thing in the 1500s. Inflation started going, and people and governments depreciated their coinage, and it went right on until the early 1600s, and all the dreadful things. The authoritarians then corrupted the Catholic Church into a murderous police state, and so then prices went up that far for a little more than 100 years, and then they came down, and the complexion of everything changed. So on our experience, it began around in the early 1900s, and the inflation, the wars, the murders, everything else, the state murder, all there, and it's extended out now to more than 120 years. But the excesses now are such that once this current inflation in assets rolls over, and I think that could be this fall, then the whole complexion changes. There'll be no money for ambitious people in government and that sort of thing. So I think there's another great reformation coming, and it'll be quite exciting. And thanks for the question.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy as we take a look at some interesting headlines next.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Bob, some of the headlines that caught your attention today. Ruble. Yeah. Ruble hits weakest in 15 months.
What's the story? That makes sense, doesn't it? If the Russian financial system runs out of dollars, they won't be able to prosecute the war. And, of course, the history shows that at the 2008 big high for crude oil, 147, and you had Putin invaded Chechnya, and then 2014 it got up to 107, and that was then a venture into Crimea. And then when Putin stepped into Ukraine, the price had jumped up to, he moved in February, and it was up to like above 100, and then in March it did hit 130, I think it was. So Putin needs hard money to prosecute a war. So this is going to be a proxy for anybody else who is ambitious as well, is that he's going to run out of dollars, and the only way he got the dollars was to sell crude oil. And if the bid for crude is going down, and I think it can go down a lot more, then he is hooped and Russia goes broke. So this is where this headline is important, that the ruble is going down.
The next headline, mortgage catastrophes brew in Britain as millions are pushed to insolvency.
Yeah, well, that's the rate, the payments are, if you've got a flexible mortgage, as interest rates go up, your interest rates go up, and that then becomes a killer.
Headline, you cannot keep a good bull down.
Yeah, well, that's what we got this week. Yeah, I've seen a few headlines come out that people are now saying, oh, this is going to extend, and we're going into, the old bull market may be back and whatever. It's a new bull market, whatever they want to call it. So they're getting pretty positive out there. But with the yield curve having inverted, a recession is inevitable. So we're watching that. And so I think going into the fall, whatever strength we've had in commodity prices will roll over. And then with the credit crisis, as asset prices deflate, you can't service the debt, and then you get a credit crisis. So I think come October, we should be seeing some pretty scary headlines.
Bob, going back to the ruble hits weakest in 15 months headline, Russia and China have been accumulating gold over the last 12 years, as much as they can lay their hands on. So even with a partially gold-backed currency, the ruble's still garbage.
Oh, yeah. You have the state with the national currency has to have the full faith of the markets that it's going to meet. You know, if you take a ruble in, you're going to get that amount of gold. And that's that. So, of course, this is no one is talking about gold convertibility. The economists in central banking and in academia will just go berserk if anybody starts talking about a gold convertibility. But I do believe that at some time, by way of reforming reckless central banking, the only way you can do it, you can't get rid of a central bank, but the only way you can reform them is to limit their ambition, and that's can be done with a gold convertibility. So I think it'll happen.
And more signs of economic trouble in China. Two headlines here. Two more China builders say they can't meet debt obligations, and Chinese local governments used fake property deals to boost revenues.
Oh, yeah, I like the one about fake property deals. Somewhere that's got to run out, and you've got hundreds of empty apartment towers in China, and you've got roads and railroads connecting empty apartment units. It's been a crazy boom, and somewhere, well, of course, in the boom that culminated in 1873, the big play was in railroads, and everybody was building a railroad and promoting the stock. And then when it started to crash, Vanderbilt just observed there was no point in building railroads from nowhere to nowhere. So,
There is that slogan. Again, everything contradicts if you look at slogans. Build it and they will come. I'm sure the Chinese were hoping for that. Build it and they will come.
That's from a magnificent movie.
Yes. So it works if you're building a field of dreams, but not if you build a city that nobody wants to live in. By the way, I saw an article about why those artificial Chinese cities didn't work. They didn't build universities and technical institutes to attract intelligent people.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, good you thing. Have to have the full deal package. Every great city has a great university, does it not?
Yeah.
Yes. Headline, fear of missing out rally for world's worst rated bonds comes to an abrupt end.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been a downtick in junk, but it's not over yet. You have to wait until it actually breaks down. Same as with the T-bill yield. It's had its high. It came in by about 30 beeps, and now it's testing that high. So I think the T-bill rate will roll over and decline. And that will, because this is, I've mentioned it before, but in the T-bill rate in May of 1929 got up to a little over 5%. And then that June, it had declined a little. But at that point, you couldn't say the trend had changed. But in looking back on it, that was the signal that the boom was ending. And so this is what I'm using now, is it looks like the T-bill rates are trying to roll over and decline. And if they do, then that's saying the boom will soon be over. So, well, actually, you won't believe it, Jim, but watching the chart on T-bill rates is fascinating. So, yeah.
Headline, U.S. consumer confidence races to 17-month high from Reuters.
Yep, there we are. This is, I think, what's going on is I can say that the yield curve is inverted, which happens with a boom, and the inversion says that there will be a recession. And what you've got here is the tremendous shock that the authorities put into the global system with their lockdowns with COVID. And I think wherever people are, they're trying to get back to normal. So I think this explains the still good employment numbers in the U.S. and other places. So, we're looking at a boom, and the boom is probably cresting.
Headline, U.S. electric truck manufacturer Lordstown files for bankruptcy, from Reuters.
Yeah, well, if you make an electric truck, you might take 8,000 pounds of battery to make it worthwhile. How are you going to carry something? And I just read an article about the comedian Rowan Atkinson.
Mr. Bean.
Yep. And he is criticizing electric vehicles. So I looked him up. He has a master's degree in electrical engineering.
Wow.
Okay, but he was going for a PhD, but doing comic sticks and acting became so attractive that he didn't continue. And as I said, a master's degree in electrical engineering plus controlling something or other. So he's really quite an accomplished man.
A physical fact, electric vehicles are most efficient up to 60 Ks or 40 miles an hour. Gasoline, diesel vehicles are most efficient over 40 miles an hour or 60 K.
Yeah.
So it depends what you're going to use the vehicle for. A long-haul vehicle, electric doesn't make sense if you're on a highway. If you do a lot of highway driving, a hybrid's probably the best solution there because then you can go to electric when you have to slow down for city traffic.
Yeah.
But electric isn't the solution for everything.
No. The folks who buy electric cars are displaying a virtue because they don't have anything nasty coming out of the exhaust pipe. But they don't understand how much nasty and toxic stuff you got to put together and mine and put it together to make batteries for those cars. And then after their life is over, you got a disposable problem. So, electric cars were tried. And in 1910, you had the Baker Electric. And in upscale Manhattan, it was a very useful vehicle to have. And there might have been thousands of them then. But then it was discovered that gasoline engines were much more practical. And I'll say that gasoline engines are still much more practical than these electric wonders. So,
Bob, always fun chatting with you. Have a great long weekend.
Yep, we've got two celebrations to observe, and we're going to do it for sure.
The two best in the world, I say.
Yep. Okay, Jim.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
comments made on HowStreet.com Radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.